good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can also listen to the podcast 24/7 in your favorite podcast app by searching for the Nick Craig Show or visiting nickcraig.com. And if whatever platform you're listening on, if you don't mind giving us a review or rating, it would be greatly appreciated. We've got a busy show coming up for you this Wednesday. A lot going on at the national level this morning, and we'll dive into the big story of the day, which was Trump's attempt to put a pause on temporary funding, or put a temporary stoppage on funding coming out of the federal government. There's no question about it that we have, at least here in the United States, with our out-of-control spending, we have put ourselves at a serious, serious disadvantage. We have borrowed our way into oblivion, and it is a very, very tough issue to get out of. This is not something that you do with the snap of a finger. This is not something that you magically solve by just, oh, we're going to cut spending a little bit here and there. I mean, you look at the national debt right now, it's over $36 trillion going up every second that we speak. It's completely unsustainable long term. We are currently spending against our grandchildren's grandchildren in terms of money. It's completely impractical. But that's what's going on. And so you've heard over decades now individuals talking about getting government spending back under control, because it's a good talking point. And it's a good thing to say. It resonates with the American voters when you say, you know what, we're spending too much money, we've got to get things back in line. It sounds good. And inherently, it's a good thing, right? We would want to get spending back in line. We'd like to get some of this stuff back in check. However, the practicality of that is incredibly complicated. And the issue that we're dealing with right now is there's really no good way to do it. You had an attempt by the Trump administration, reading this story over this morning at the Epic Times, to put essentially block on grants, loans, and other federal financial assistance programs from the new administration. There was a memo that leaked late in the day on Monday from the Office of Management and Budget Director, Matthew Vaith, he's the one that's in charge of that, to put on hold temporarily this money. And I found this very interesting piece of information in this article. Take a listen to this. Of the $10 trillion that the federal government spent in 2024, now that number, of course, is already beyond the pale, but in the $10 trillion that the federal government spent in the 2024 fiscal year, more than $3 trillion of that was allocated for grants, loans, and other financial assistance. 30%. You've probably heard the acronym before, NGO. Funding of NGOs. That stands for non-government organization or non-governmental organization. These are groups that are like kind of somewhat affiliated with the government. They're not the government themselves, but they're close enough affiliated with the government that they get millions, in this case, billions and trillions worth of dollars from the federal government each and every year. It's not sustainable. Again, we are $36 trillion in debt. So the Trump administration was attempting to put this pause in place effective 5 p.m. last night. And of course, this immediately sparked outrage from the left, with calls and claims that Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and SNAP, which used to be called food stamps, that all of this stuff is just going to stop. Now, of course, that wasn't true, but that didn't stop the narrative from spinning up at a very rapid rate, which is exactly what happened. You had yesterday liberals on social media, liberals in the White House press briefing room, which we'll get into, making these outlandish claims that all of these programs are going to be stopped after being told, no, that's not the case. But the media is in the business right now of fear-mongering. Because now that Trump is in the Oval Office, now that Republicans are in control of the House and the Senate, the left is on their back foot. They don't really have anywhere to go but to attack Trump, attack the Republicans, and claim everything that they're doing is, of course, hurting individuals. In this case, the claim is that Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, government benefits, all of that stuff is being put on pause. Now, that is not true, of course. That's not what we're talking about, but it sounds really good, and that's the whole point. If you're trying to gin up emotion in individuals and gin up outrage, which is what the media essentially does, and that's kind of their core business model, the headline of Trump is taking away your medical benefits sounds really good. That is likely to invoke some sort of major reaction from somebody hearing that. The problem is, it's a lie. The problem is, it's not true. You saw some back and forth exchange with this yesterday in the White House press briefing room. Caroline Leavitt, who had joined me plenty of times back on the old radio show, she is the youngest press secretary in U.S. history. She's 27 years old. She absolutely killed it in the briefing room yesterday, which I found out actually used to be the White House swimming pool. Did you know that the White House used to have a swimming pool? I did not. But that old, the room that is now in the basement of the White House, the press briefing room, used to be the White House swimming pool. Pretty interesting. Kind of explains why it's so narrow. It was a pool at one point. So you had all of these reporters asking the same questions over and over and over and over again about government funding. CNN took a stab at it, of course. They've got nothing better that they need to be doing. So this was the back and forth exchange with Caroline Leavitt and some reporter, some journalist, put that in quotes, some journalist from CNN yesterday. Take a listen to this.
Then let me ask you a separate question about the confusion that still exists across the country right now as it relates to the freeze or the pause as it's described. President Trump, of course, ran one of the key policy items was that he was going to lower prices, lower the cost of everything from groceries, as he often said. But in many of the cases, it would seem that some of these moves could raise prices for real Americans on everything from low-income heating, that program, child care programs. Will nothing that the president's doing here in terms of the freeze in these programs raise prices on ordinary Americans?
What particular actions are you referring to that
I'm
would...
I'm referring to LHEAP right now. That's the low-income heating program, for example. We can talk about... There's no clarity, so I could refer to a lot of them. We don't know what they are specifically. Can you tell us that LHEAP, that LIHEAP is not one of those... affected.
So you're asking a hypothetical based on programs that you can't even identify.
No, I just identified.
What I can tell you
is that since you guys haven't identified, let's do it together just for Americans at home. Medicaid, is that affected?
By the way, when he's asking this question, being a smug jerk in the White House press briefing room, there had already been multiple questions that were asked about Medicaid. Is that being paused? Is that being stopped? The answer every single time was no. But because the media is like a rabies-ridden animal, they are foaming at the mouth over Trump. They're foaming at the mouth over the president and the actions that he's taking that I think are pretty popular with the American people. We've just gone through very rough economic times over the last couple of years. Everybody has felt it. Everybody has dealt with it. And so it is a fair response and reaction to ask of your government, why can you not do what we have had to do, which was cut back on our lives? Maybe not take the yearly family vacation because prices were so high. Maybe only going out to dinner once or twice a month instead of three or four times a month. Those are the kinds of sacrifices that American families have had to make under the previous administration. And they're out of control government spending. And so when we have to make those changes, when we have to change our lifestyle to keep up with the rising costs of goods and services, the rising costs of inflation, high interest rates, I think it's fair to ask the federal government, why don't you do the same thing? We have to live within our means. Now, you, of course, can go out and spend tens of thousands of dollars on credit cards. That's if that's your prerogative, have at it. Most people probably don't prefer to live that way because it doesn't really put you in a good position long term. But of course, the fear mongering. Well, what about Medicaid? What about the low income oil heating program? Just this smug nature of the media in the White House briefing room yesterday. Take a listen.
I gave you a list of examples: Social Security, Medicare, welfare benefits, food stamps that will not be impacted by this federal pause. I can get you the full list after this briefing from the Office of Management and Budget. But I do want to address the cost cutting because that's certainly very important and cutting the cost of living in this country. President Trump has taken historic action over the past week to do that. He actually signed a memorandum to deliver emergency price relief for American families, which took a number of actions. I can walk you through those. He also repealed many onerous Biden administration regulations. We know over the past 4 years, American households has been essentially taxed $55,000 in regulations from the previous administration. President Trump, with the swipe of his pen, rescinded those, which will ultimately put more money back in the pockets of the American people. So deregulation is a big deal. And then when it comes to energy, I mean, the president signed an executive order to declare a national energy emergency here at home, which is going to make America energy dominant. We know that energy is one of the number one drivers of inflation. And so that's why the president wants to increase our energy supply to bring down costs for Americans. The Trump energy boom is incoming, and Americans can expect that.
Great. Phenomenal response. And not falling into the trap that media outlets like CNN are trying to put forward. We have a spending problem. And nobody, you can't sit here with a straight face and tell me otherwise. We have a spending problem. The phrase that you've heard before, we continue to spend like drunken sailors, is a very accurate statement to make. Because that's exactly what's going on. And of course, when the president tries to exert some sort of authority over this, attempts to say, hey, we've got a lot going on here. There's a lot of money being sucked out of the federal government as every second goes by. We need to put a pause on this. We need to just kind of step back for a second and gather our composure. Of course, the response is, oh, well, you're taking away people's benefits. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Again, not true. None of it true. But that doesn't stop the conversation from taking place. Caroline Levitt also talked about some of the immediate cost-cutting measures that were set to take place through OMB and through DOGE, and the dollar amounts that she's talking about here are absolutely remarkable. Take a listen to this.
Just during this pause, DOGE and OMB have actually found that there was $37 million that was about to go out the door to the World Health Organization, which is an organization, as you all know, that President Trump, with the swipe of his pen and that executive order, is no longer wants the United States to be a part of. So that wouldn't be in line with the president's agenda. DOGE and OMB also found that there was about to be $50 million taxpayer dollars that went out the door to fund condoms in Gaza. That is a preposterous waste of taxpayer money. So that's what this pause is focused on, being good stewards of tax dollars.
Don't you love that? $50 million to fund condoms in Gaza? I'm not going to even attempt to try and explain how that makes any sense in any reasonable way, shape, or form. We'll just leave that one on the table for Caroline Levitt, because there's really nothing that you can say in response to that because of how absurd it sounds. But it perfectly lines up with the kind of nonsense that has gotten us $36 trillion in debt. We have a spending problem. So the Trump administration attempts to do this, and what's the response? Some liberal Democrat judge temporarily blocks the president's plan to freeze federal aid. This came out yesterday afternoon. This was after the press briefing took place at 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. And this court decision came out a couple of hours after that. So the plan to get a hold of this, the plan to take a step back just for a minute and say, let's look at the full picture here. Let's give us an opportunity to dig into what we're looking at, the kinds of dollars that we're talking about, and find some sort of reasonable path forward to dealing with our out-of-control spending was, of course, blocked by a Democrat judge. Let's get into it. A federal judge temporarily blocked parts of Donald Trump's directive to pause federal loans, grants, and other financial assistance on January the 28th, hours after advocacy groups and, who else? Several Democratic state attorney generals filed lawsuits against the administration. Surprise, surprise, surprise. During a Tuesday afternoon hearing in Washington federal court, U.S. District Judge Lauren Alicorn granted a, quote, brief administrative stay, ordering the Trump administration to refrain from blocking open awards or funds that have been slated for disbursement until at least February the 3rd. That's Monday. The judge made her temporary ruling after hastily scheduling a video conference 1 hour before the freeze was supposed to take effect at 5 p.m. That's when it was supposed to go into effect, 5 o'clock last night. The judge said the ruling will, quote, maintain the status quo. Isn't that exactly the issue? Isn't that the whole point of doing what the Trump administration was attempting to do here? The status quo has gotten us $36 trillion in debt. The status quo is funding condom programs in Gaza. The status quo is giving tens of millions of dollars to the World Health Organization, which the Trump administration pulled us out of with an executive action his first day in office. But, you know, status quo. The judge said the ruling will, quote, maintain status quo and does not prevent the Trump administration from suspending funds for new programs, nor does it require resuming expired funds. So there's now another hearing that is scheduled for February 3rd, that's this coming Monday, at 11 a.m., where the judge will determine the next steps for the case. The White House Office of Management and Budget issued a memorandum on Monday directing all federal agencies to pause grants, loans, and other financial assistance while the administration reviewed the programs. The lawsuit was filed by the National Council of Nonprofits because all of these NGOs that suck down millions of dollars worth of your and my taxpayer dollars are getting called out. These groups, like Catholic Charities, that are paying to fly illegal immigrants into the United States of America, giving them food, housing, and other sorts of dollars and resources that you and I are paying for, needs to stop. It needs to stop. As a Catholic, the Catholic Charities is a disgrace. Tell me why the federal government should be allocating taxpayer dollars to nonprofits and charities like that for them to encourage and facilitate individuals' illegal entry into the country. So that's why the lawsuit was filed by the National Council of Nonprofits, the American Public Health Association, Main Street Alliance, and SAGE, as well as a New York LGBTQIAPLMNOP+ nonprofit, with advocacy groups arguing that Trump's plan would have a, quote, devastating impact on hundreds of thousands of grant recipients. That's exactly the point. There should be an impact. These groups have been taking advantage of the federal government because nobody has had the balls to call them out. Nobody has had the willingness to actually go and try and solve this problem. It's constant gaslighting and it's constant, it's just talk. I mean, we hear it all the time from people running for office, folks that are in elected office. We got to get government spending under control. We got to do something about the money that we're spending. Yeah, I know, we've heard it. It's nothing new. It's nothing unique that you're saying, but nobody's actually got the courage to do it except Trump. And then what's the result? Some Democrat judge blocks it. So before the judge granted a temporary restraining order on portions of the freeze, which the plaintiffs were seeking, a group of Democratic state attorney generals led by no one else than New York Attorney General Letitia James announced that they were also planning on suing the Trump administration on Tuesday. So that's the result. So Trump's not allowed to put a temporary stop on something. But a judge is allowed to put a temporary stop on something. By the way, the judge who did this was appointed by Joe Biden. So just to make sure that we're calling balls and strikes here equally, this judge, Lauren Alcon, or whatever her name is, former Solicitor General of the District of Columbia and Joe Biden appointee to the U.S. District Court. So that's what's going on. Judge allowed to temporarily block it to gather more information to figure out the path forward. The Trump administration not allowed to block it. Not allowed to say, hey, this sounds like it could be a little out of control. They're not allowed to do that because of, you know, again, Democrats in blue states and charities and nonprofits that have been taking advantage of the United States for decades might have the spigot turned off. I used to discuss this all the time. Well, not all the time, but anytime budget conversations would come up here locally. And we'll, by the way, we'll be digging into the budget discussions here. New Hanover County, the city of Wilmington, the state, our local beach municipalities, Carolina Beach, Curie Beach, Wrightsville, whatever. We'll talk about that as the budget season progresses. I don't believe that government should be in the business of funding nonprofits and charities. And I know that probably comes off pretty harsh to some individuals, but it's not the place of government. And this is not saying that nonprofits and charities don't do really good work, because they do. So they need to find a way to secure that money through the private sector, businesses, private donations. This idea that local, state, and federal governments are in the business of funding these groups is absurd. And it's even more absurd when you look at here in Wilmington, when we've got this huge endowment from the sale of the hospital, yet the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County continue to fund nonprofits at the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. The question is why? It doesn't make any sense. But again, status quo. This is the way that it's been done. It's not the role of government. I am a strong believer in a narrow scope of government. I'm a strong believer that the government needs to stay in their lane. Do what you need to do as government with things that you've been tasked to accomplish and stay out of everything else. There is nothing in the United States Constitution that requires the federal government, state government, or local governments to fund nonprofits and other charity organizations. Again, not to say they don't do good work, because many of them do. And if we have budget surpluses, if we've got cash flowing out of our ears, and you want to look at funding some groups, I'm not necessarily opposed to that. But when a county or a city is talking about raising property taxes, which of course is what happens every time budget discussion comes forward, when a county or a city or the federal government is looking at spending more money, and the way they do that is by raising taxes, it's completely unexcusable. It's not the role of government. So you've got this temporary block that's in place. What exactly happens here between now and Monday, I'm going to admit I'm not exactly sure. But it's something that the Trump administration hopefully fights tooth and nail for. And we'll see what this judge does, I guess, 11 o'clock next Monday, or this coming Monday. We'll see what she does. And in other, you know, cost-saving measures, the Trump administration is offering buyouts to federal employees. We'll talk about that coming up here in just a minute. I want to remind you that you can get access to daily show notes and more by subscribing to The Nick Craig Show on Patreon. It's patreon.com/Nick Craig. You'll also get access to our monthly hangout. That's one of the perks of subscribing at the Patreon. A couple of different tiers available, $5, $10 a month. You can also set a custom amount. If you feel like you're getting some value from the show, I encourage you to head on over there, patreon.com/Nick Craig. Our first monthly hangout is taking place tomorrow night at 7 p.m. There is a link in the Patreon with a Zoom call link. You can click there and check that out, patreon.com/Nick Craig. And I just want to thank all of the individuals that have come on board over the last couple of weeks and supported the program through their financial contributions. It's greatly appreciated over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Federal government, too big. Federal government, spend too much money. So the Trump administration is offering buyouts to nearly all federal employees. This is a great idea. Federal employees are being offered buyouts under the Trump administration's new deferred resignation initiative, with the Office of Personnel Management, which is OPM, sending emails with a proposal to federal workers, according to Katie Miller, who is a member of the Department of Government Efficiency. Doge, would you look at that? Miller wrote in a post on X yesterday, quote, "This email is being sent to more than 2 million federal employees. A memo from OPM that was circulated yesterday in the agency aligns with reporting from Axios that was cited by Miller. It provides more details about the deferred resignation initiative, though it does not provide any details about timing and the scope of email, the scope of the email containing the proposal that is being circulated to workers. The OPM memo indicates that the voluntary program is being offered to all full-time federal employees, with the exception of personnel in the military, the United States Postal Service, immigration enforcement, as well as national security or any position specifically excluded by the employing agency. The memo states, quote, deferred resignation exempts those employees who choose it from return to office requirements, noting also that employees who accept deferred resignation should have their duties reassigned or eliminated promptly and be placed on administrative leave until September the 30th. So you're getting like an 8-month essential buyout with this contract. In that time, employees will continue to accrue retirement benefits during the deferred resignation period, while those who miss the February the 6th deadline to submit their resignations due to factors like being on leave may be granted an extension. Employees will also be allowed to accelerate their resignation date earlier than September the 30th, but no extensions past that date will be permitted. The buyout proposal has drawn criticism from the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE, which is the largest union representing federal employees. The president of that organization said in a statement yesterday, quote, "The number of civil servants hasn't meaningfully changed since the 1970s, but there are more Americans than ever who rely on government services. Purging the federal government of dedicated career civil servants will have a vast, unintended consequence that will cause chaos for Americans who depend on functioning federal government." This statement is so beyond tone deaf. The exact issue that we're trying to solve is career civil servants. There is nothing wrong with being a civil servant, obviously. There is nothing wrong with doing that for a career. But you can't sit here with a straight face and tell me that you are getting 100% effective utilization of some of these individuals. There's over 2 million federal employees in the country. And this statement said, oh, this is going to create chaos for Americans that depend on a functioning federal government. I guess the union president here doesn't understand how much of a pain in the ass it is to interface with the federal government. I guess the union president here doesn't understand the kind of chaos that you have to go through to actually interface with the government. Why don't you go tell the folks in Western North Carolina about how this is going to create chaos for them, the ones that are depending on the federal government? Why don't you tell the individuals that will spend tens of hours on the phone with the IRS over the next couple of months getting transferred back and forth to different IRS agents that can't help them with their issue as they're trying to file their federal tax returns? It's absurd. The federal government doesn't work efficiently. The federal government does not work effectively for the people in which they're supposed to serve. Hint, hint, you and I. The federal government is bloated beyond belief. It does not provide good core services to the people that it's supposed to. And I can promise you this. Interfacing, for the most part, interfacing with the federal government is an awful experience. It's an absolutely awful experience. Which is why when you'll hear me talk with elected officials, specifically those in Congress, whether it be Senator Ted Budd or Congressman and David Rouser, they always talk about reaching out to their office when you have issues with the federal government, like a passport, like Social Security benefits, like issues with military retirement, issues with the VA. Why are those? Why are members of Congress having to promote reaching out to your elected officials to interface with the federal government? Because apparently, these federal workers, these federal agencies, are already doing their job, right? I mean, that's what it reads here. Purging the federal government of dedicated career civil servants will have vast unintended consequences that will cause chaos for Americans who depend on a functioning federal government. Again, newsflash, the federal government doesn't function very well. The president of the American Federation of Government Employees went on to say, "This offer should not be viewed as voluntary. Between the flurry of anti-worker executive orders and policies, it is clear that the Trump administration's goal is to turn the federal government into a toxic environment where workers cannot stay even if they want to." Well, I think if you're somebody that is working hard and doing your job, there's plenty of place for you within the federal government. If you're somebody that has been working remote for the last 3 years, not really doing a whole hell of a lot of everything and don't want to show back up to the office, there's not a role in the federal government for you. Sorry. The buyout proposal appears to be part of an administrative effort to bring federal workers back into the office, as directed by President Donald Trump's order on January the 20th, in which he called on agency heads to terminate remote working arrangements with limited exceptions. The memorandum reads, quote, "Heads of all government departments and agencies in the executive branch of the government shall, as soon as practical, take all necessary steps to terminate remote work arrangements and require employees to return to work in person at their respective duty stations on a full-time basis, provided that the department and the agency heads shall make exceptions as they deem necessary." This is something that you are seeing in private business as well. This is not anything new. There's been a huge push over the last couple of years for major companies to demand that their workers come back to the office. And so the question you're probably asking yourself is why? Why is it that major entities like Amazon are requesting that their workers come back to the office? I think the answer is pretty clear. They have seen a dip in productivity. Now, I am fortunate enough to work from home. I know plenty of other individuals that work from home. There's nothing wrong with remote work. But the individuals that we're talking about were not hired to work remotely. These individuals were hired to be full-time in-office individuals. COVID-19 turned all of that upside down. But we're well past that. It's January 29th, 2025. We're well past, I can't go to the office because of COVID-19. I'm going to, you know, magically explode if somebody coughs on me. This stuff needs to change. And it's not just in government, you're seeing it in private business as well. So essentially, the Trump administration is offering individuals 8 months of severance for all intents and purposes if they take part in this deferred resignation initiative that is being brought forward. You'll be these individuals will receive pay until the end of September. And the deadline for this is February the 6th, so next Thursday, for individuals to say, yep, I'm okay with this. You get your 8 months of essential severance. You continue to accrue retirement. And then at that point, at the end of September, you're done. You're retired. You're done with working in the federal government. Why is that a bad thing? I don't know. Why is that so controversial? I have no idea. It's a voluntary program. And then again, what's the attempt? To produce productivity and to save money. Two things that the federal government struggles with at a major level. They're not efficient. They're not quick with what they do. And they spend a lot of money to accomplish the task. Because there's, you know, 18 people in one office doing the job that is very simple for one person to do. But because they're federal employees, because it is damn near impossible to lose a federal job, these positions continue in perpetuity until these individuals actually retire. Trump is attempting to speed some of that up. We'll see if folks take place in it. Kind of unknown. Yesterday at the White House press briefing, there was some pretty major news in regards to who will have access to the press briefing room. We'll have details on that coming up. Plus, Stephen Miller in a back and forth exchange on CNN with Jake Tapper. We all know and love Jake Tapper, very fair journalist over at the Cable News Network. We'll get into some of those clips as well coming up. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Good Wednesday morning to you. Don't forget to give me a follow over on X at Nicholas M. Craig. Coming up a little bit later on this afternoon, we'll be live back at 2 o'clock. The North Carolina House is set to have a committee hearing on Helene recovery. We'll be watching that along on X and Rumble coming up a little bit later on this afternoon. So make sure you follow me over there on X. You'll get a notification of those live streams over at x.com/Nicholas M. Craig. All right, so back to a busy day in news today, really yesterday, as we had the first briefing for the new administration. Caroline Leavitt, who was very close with the Trump campaign, was a huge surrogate out appearing on cable news networks all over the place during the campaign, has risen to the level of press secretary. She's the youngest press secretary in U.S. history. And we are, of course, in the changing times of a media landscape. I talked about this a little bit yesterday morning. If you missed that, go back and check out yesterday's podcast. And so with that changing in media, with the big change in how individuals are consuming content via podcasts and live streams and things of that nature, the White House is set to make some major changes to the White House press briefing room. Take a listen from yesterday.
And in keeping with this revolutionary media approach that President Trump deployed during the campaign, the Trump White House will speak to all media outlets and personalities, not just the legacy media who are seated in this room. Because according to recent polling from Gallup, Americans' trust in mass media has fallen to a record low. Millions of Americans, especially young people, have turned from traditional television outlets and newspapers to consume their news from podcasts, blogs, social media, and other independent outlets. It's essential to our team that we share President Trump's message everywhere and adapt this White House to the new media landscape in 2025. To do this, I am excited to announce the following changes will be made to this historic James S. Brady briefing room, where Mr. Brady's legacy will endure. This White House believes strongly in the First Amendment, so it's why our team will work diligently to restore the press passes of the 440 journalists whose passes were wrongly revoked by the previous administration. We're also opening up this briefing room to new media voices who produce news-related content and whose outlet is not already represented by one of the seats in this room. We welcome independent journalists, podcasters, social media influencers, and content creators to apply for credentials to cover this White House. And you can apply now on our new website, whitehouse.gov/newmedia. Starting today, this seat in the front of the room, which is usually occupied by the press secretary's staff, will be called the new media seat. My team will review the applications and give credentials to new media applicants who meet our criteria and pass United States Secret Service requirements to enter the White House complex. So in light of these announcements, our first questions for today's briefing will go to these new media members whose outlets, despite being some of the most viewed news websites in the country, have not been given seats in this room.
So yeah, right. Trump is hiding from the American people, right? His administration's not transparent enough. He's not doing enough to get out in front of the American people. He's such a shady guy that he has to hide everything that he does, right? These are some of the constant tropes from the left. Not only has Trump spoken more with media outlets and spoken to the press more than Joe Biden did over his entire term, but now you've got in the white, or you will have, in the press briefing room, new media outlets, as Caroline Levitt mentioned, podcasts, blogs, individuals that are not affiliated with a major news network. So, of course, they don't have access and in the past have not had access to press credentials. That's changing. To me, that's a great change. Because contrary to what major media outlets would want you to believe, they're losing in popularity. We went over some of the cable news ratings yesterday on the show. The struggling and failing viewership of outlets like CNN. Now, of course, the indication here is not that all of these legacy media outlets are going to be kicked out of the room. It's that there will be a couple of seats in the front of the press briefing room in which these media outlets, blogs, podcasts, content creators that have tens of millions of followers that reach more individuals in an afternoon than CNN does in an entire 24/7 news cycle. Those individuals will be allowed into the White House press briefing room and will get to ask questions of the press secretary. We are in uncharted times in terms of media. Things are happening at a rapid rate. And it's great to see, of course, a very young press secretary, just 27 years old, that they are leading this charge. And of course, restoring, kind of bearing the lead in one of those, restoring over 400 media outlets that had their press credentials revoked by the previous administration. Surprise, surprise. Right, because Joe Biden was really the president for the American people. Joe Biden really was the president for all. He was incredibly transparent, always getting his concise thoughts out there for us to understand and to, you know, have him be able to explain what he wants to do. That was definitely what was going on in the past administration, right? I caught this interesting thread yesterday on X from Charlie Schipering, who works over at the Daily Mail. And his post says this: remarkable level of Trump press access in the first week of his presidency. And he lists out the times in which Trump is taking questions from the media. Oval Office executive signing orders. That was day one, 15 minutes and 38 seconds. Trump's West Wing, him walking in between the West Wing, 30 seconds there. Before Marine One, that's at the White House, departed for North Carolina and California, 3 minutes, five questions. After landing at the Asheville Airport, 7 minutes, six questions. In Fletcher, which is where that briefing room was that we showed you where Trump was sitting at the table with the officials there, 11 minutes, 15 questions. Arriving in Los Angeles last Friday, 3 minutes, two questions. Before leaving Los Angeles, 2 minutes, six questions. Aboard Air Force One en route to Florida, 20 minutes, Trump spoke with the press, 34 questions. And then once again, aboard Air Force One, en route to Washington, D.C., 12 minutes, 29 questions. You are struggling from severe Trump derangement syndrome if you can't look at the access that this president has and not believe that it is a standard that needs to be followed going forward. Does it need to be all of this? No, Trump, I think, is an outlier in regards to the media. But this is what we should expect from our elected officials. This is what we should expect, and we did not have that in the previous administration. Joe Biden went months without taking questions from reporters, months at a time. Of course, you know, saving democracy and all that other fun stuff that he talked about. This is the gold standard for access to the president, access to the Oval Office, access to the leader of our country. Caroline Leavitt was asked yesterday as the press briefing was wrapping up about how often she's going to be back and how often, you know, these press briefings are going to happen. And her answer was probably not what the media wanted to hear, but she said, you know, the president himself is the most effective communicator within the administration, and he's already given you guys incredible access in a week. So we're not exact. So there's not probably going to be a daily briefing because Trump's speaking to the media so much. We don't know exactly what that schedule is going to look like. We don't know exactly how often she's going to be out there. But if Trump continues with this level of access to the media, I mean, what's the point of the press briefing? Trump's answering the questions and taking some of this stuff on himself. So does it really even matter? This is what we need to expect and demand going forward for both Republicans and Democrats. Now, of course, they don't like doing that. Elected individuals, both Republican and Democrat, typically don't like having to answer questions. Trump does. His administration does. And we need to demand this in the future, because it's a win for everybody. So taking a look at a couple of other things as we wrap up the show here this morning, another little back and forth exchange during the press briefing yesterday. Of course, illegal immigration is the big topic. Democrats and major media outlets, of course, one and the same, attempting to tear at your heartstrings, pull your heartstrings over immigration. It's a major issue. It's something that the previous group, under Joe Biden and his borders czar Kamala Harris, allowed to run completely amok in our country. And so now the argument, or in some of the narrative that you're seeing spun up, is that the Trump administration is not going after just violent criminals. They're going after everybody, right? We saw Selena Gomez crying yesterday over that. My people are being attacked. So this was a question. I don't know who this reporter is, but some reporter was trying to challenge the Trump administration through the White House press secretary on this yesterday. Take a listen.
On immigration, of the 3,500 arrests ICE has made so far since President Trump came back into office, can you just tell us the numbers? How many have a criminal record versus those who are just in the country illegally?
All of them, because they illegally broke our nation's laws and therefore they are criminals as far as this administration goes. I know the last administration didn't see it that way, so it's a big culture shift in our nation to view someone who breaks our immigration laws as a criminal, but that's exactly what they are.
You may have been one of the worst first. They all have a criminal record.
And welcome to the briefing.
If they broke our nation's laws, yes. They are criminal.
Yeah. Very hard to understand. Very hard to wrap your head around. Individuals who broke our laws to come into the country are in fact criminals. A masterful smackdown by Carolyn Leavitt. Quote, if they broke our nation's laws, yes, they are criminal. What's the argument? What's the challenge there? And keeping on this immigration thread, you had Stephen Miller, who's the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, giving some airtime to CNN yesterday, the illustrious Jake Tapper. We know where he falls politically, of course. Flaming liberal. And so he tried getting Stephen Miller in a little bit of a back and forth yesterday on CNN. And Stephen Miller just absolutely slapped him down. And what was the topic? Of course, immigration. As I mentioned yesterday, so disingenuous from these media outlets that ignored the issue of immigration for years under the Biden administration. All of a sudden, they care about it so much that it is completely taken over the media landscape. Take a listen to this.
A question about, because one of the reasons that President Trump got elected, according to President Trump in an interview, I think it was with Kristen Welker of NBC, was because of grocery prices. Not the only reason, but a reason, high prices, inflation, especially at the grocery. The Department of Agriculture says that between 2020 and 2022, 42% of crop workers were undocumented immigrants. And in many cases, as you know, these migrants do jobs many Americans do not want to do.
Now, I'm going to pause it right there. I adamantly disagree with the assertion there from Jake Tapper. This is a typical Democrat liberal talking point. Well, the only people that will want to work in our country are illegal immigrants. Americans don't want to work. So the only people that can do these jobs are people that are illegally in the country. That is a BS narrative that is constantly pushed by the left. It's not accurate. It's not exact. It's not what goes on at all. But it's a, for them, it's a very convenient talking point. It's something that they can run with ad nauseum, and it kind of, for them, it provides them the kind of shade that they need for their continued coverage. It's the way that they can justify breaking our laws. It's the way that they can justify having immigration law completely thrown out the window. And so they do this by saying, oh, well, nobody wants to, nobody will do these jobs. The only people that will do them are illegals, illegal aliens, illegal immigrants. It's not true. But of course, that doesn't stop the mainstream media from running with the talking point, which is precisely and exactly what they do. So going back to Jake Tapper, take a listen to this.
So how do how does President Trump make sure that the effort to deport people who are not in this country legally doesn't end up hurting Americans who want safe borders, absolutely, but also don't want to see even more higher prices in groceries?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not your position, Jake, you're just asking the question, that we should supply America's food with exploitative illegal alien labor. I obviously don't think that's what you're implying. Only 1% of alien workers in the entire country work in agriculture. The top destination for illegal aliens are large cities like New York, like Los Angeles, and small industrial towns, of course, all across the heartland, as we've seen with the Biden floods. Mm-hmm. None of those illegal aliens are doing farm work. Those 30,000 illegal aliens that Joe Biden dumped into Springfield.
Yeah, I'm talking about the ones that
I'm explaining this. It's important to understand.
Now you're kind of changing the subject.
I mean, Jake Tapper is such a jackass. I mean, it's. Oh, you're changing the subject. No. He's explaining to you your assertion that everybody that's illegally in the country is just doing farm work. All they're doing is picking strawberries and oranges all day is a lie. But stop changing the subject here, Stephen. This is the difference between coming to an argument with facts and feelings. This is the quintessential example of that. Jake Tapper and his cohorts over at CNN have feelings about this. Stephen Miller's coming with facts, and now Jake Tapper's going to accuse him of changing the subject.
I mean, I'm talking about the ones.
I will go. Give me 30 minutes. I'll go as deep as you want on this.
I'm talking about the ones that work in the agriculture industry.
I'm explaining.
You can come back and we can
audience.
Talk about the ones in the cities.
He's such a jerk.
I'll do the whole answer. The illegal aliens that Joe Biden brought into our country are not full stop doing farm work. They are not. The illegal aliens he brought in from Venezuela, from Haiti, from Nicaragua, they are not doing farm work. They are in our cities collecting welfare. As for the farmers, there is a guest worker program that President Trump supports. Over time as well, we will transition into automation, so we'll never have to have this conversation ever again. But there's no universe in which this nation is going to allow the previous president to flood our nation with millions and millions of illegal aliens who just get to stay here. And we are especially not going to allow a subset of those illegal aliens to rape and murder our citizens. So we are going to unapologetically enforce our immigration laws. And as I'm sure you will celebrate, we are going to unleash the power and might of the U.S. government to eradicate the presence of transnational threats on our soil.
So
Ah, yes. Good old CNN. Complete excoriation by Stephen Miller. And we wonder why CNN is seeing failing viewership. We wonder why we scratch our heads at nauseam, wondering why individuals are not watching the cable news network anymore. A bad, false, disingenuous assertion brought forward by Jake Tapper, which is a common one on the left. I probably saw this ridiculous post over social media over the last couple of days. MAGA farmer says that if Trump gets rid of all the illegals, the United States won't have food in 2 days. The assertion is false. Stephen Miller claims the assertion is false, saying the individuals that came into this country over the last 4 years under the Biden administration, as Joe Biden was down there with his ice cream cone, waving a yellow white flag for these individuals to cross the border, are not working in farms. They are not picking crops, as CNN and Jake Tapper want to assert. And he's spot on about it. There's no industrial farming going on in New York City, in Midtown Manhattan. There's no industrial farming going on in Los Angeles. And does Jake Tapper allow him to respond? No. He claims he's trying to change the subject. That's not what I'm talking about. Complete disingenuous reporting. And I'm so glad that Trump, once again, has surrounded himself with individuals that will call this nonsense out, that are not going to just sit back and allow Democrats like Jake Tapper, Democrat news outlets like CNN, to run with these ridiculous narratives. Well, we don't have 30 minutes for you to explain it. You don't. You have 24 hours of garbage programming that you run. If you're going to ask a question of Stephen Miller, you should at least give him, maybe a minute or two to try and explain it without jumping in and cutting him off. But they're incapable of doing that because it doesn't fit the narrative. Doesn't fit the narrative. So what do? We ignore it. Doesn't fit the narrative. So what do? Claim that they're changing the subject. Gaslighting, once again, the American public, which is why nobody's watching these outlets. So keep it up, CNN. Bravo. Continue to bury yourself in non-existence. I'm all in favor of it. We're expecting a busy day today. RFK is set to make his way in front of a Senate committee here in about 2 hours. That'll take place at 10 o'clock this morning. Plus, here in North Carolina, the House Select Committee on Helene Recovery is meeting this afternoon at 2 o'clock. We are going to hop back on live stream on X and Rumble around 2 o'clock this afternoon when that committee meeting starts. I'll bring you the committee meeting in its entirety, jump in here or there. We'll be doing that over on our X account and over on Rumble as well. So if you're not following on X at Nicholas M. Craig or Rumble, rumble.com/Nick Craig, the Nick Craig Show, make sure that you are following over there. The General Assembly also is back in Raleigh today, so we'll see what comes of the House and the Senate both convening at noon. We'll bring you details on that coming up tomorrow, plus likely a whole bunch of clips from the RFK hearing. One of those expected today, another one of those expected tomorrow. That's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget that you can follow the show over on Patreon, where you get access to show notes and a bonus exclusive content, including our monthly hangout that is happening Thursday at night. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's going to do it. Have a great Wednesday, everybody. We're back tomorrow morning live on YouTube, Rumble, and X at 7 o'clock.